football on the field. And the ball boys are discussing which one of them's gonna go get it.
I never realized how boring this game is.
The commissioner of Cynicville wonders whether there's a better allegory for two different adages. Be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. Or, the only thing worse than a thwarted revolutionary is a successful one. Than the pace of play problem in Major League Baseball. It is sort of a pretty much, it's been a constant story in MLB for the last 2 years, that there is a lot of wasted time in a baseball game. I don't think anyone's really saying, hold on a minute, you know, with blah, 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 anticipation between pitches, all that. This will be the fifth consecutive year with an average nine-inning game time of 3+ hours. And for all that extra time, there are fewer people in motion, you know, runners, fielders, because the plays that fall under the three true outcomes umbrella, home runs, bases on balls, and strikeouts, are all at historically high rates. You know, as a recovering sports writer, I've kind of struggled at how to approach this for my, you know, irregularly published desperate plea for help, quite honestly. Like, my life isn't going to be affected because baseball loses out on a coming generation of sports consumers because its games take too damn long. But what's really interesting me, because I live inside my head, and because I'd like to think I was an early adopter with, you know, advanced stats and everything going all the way back to when I was like a 12-year-old kid in 1989 and one of my teachers, you know, slipped me a Bill James book, is how much of a role analytics has had in sort of creating this problem. And that's to me a bit of a fourth wall, probably for a lot of media people, because, I mean, if you shout down analytics, you do, I mean, the metaphorical, you know, pitchforks and torches come out on Twitter. And that's sort of a faction of analysts all sort of close ranks very quickly. But you really have to wonder how much it's been a factor in this problem in baseball. The main contributor to why games are longer, and just to put it in some perspective from what I've read now, I think the average game time is 3 hours, 8 minutes. About 40 years ago, so 1980, it was 2 hours, 38 minutes. So a game is an extra half hour long. And it's not because of more mid-inning pitch and changes. It's not because of the designated hitter. It's not even because of commercial breaks. It's because of the amount of time between what SB Nation's Grant Brisby has called inaction pitches. So any pitch that isn't put into play and where no runner advanced and an at-bat didn't end. He, back before the season, wrote a really interesting piece where he compared two comparable games, one from 1984, one from 2014, by watching the telecasts, and he found out in these games had the same score, same amount of base runners. I think there was a one-person difference in the number of batters who came to the plate in that game, and he found there was 57 minutes between all the inaction pitches in the 2014 game, 32 in the 1984 game. So why are pitchers taking longer? Well, as I found out in my reading, Rob Arthur at 538 did this interesting piece that finds out every second that a pitcher takes, they get a little bit more velocity, which makes sense. It's, you know, a little extra recovery time. It's just like the average Jane or Joe at the gym, you know, taking 2 minutes between sets instead of 90 seconds. You probably get a little bit more out of that, next set of shoulder presses. So that's like one area where, analytics and that the sabermetric revolution kind of wears it for taking baseball away from what it was supposed to be or what it needs to be in order to be palatable as a consumer product. In this case, it's some relative assurance that the game is going to be completed within a 2 hour, 45 minute to 3 hour time window. It almost never happens now. In my day job, I work for the company that helps with the production of print newspapers. Yes, I know, I'm a dinosaur at the mere age of 40. And I almost have to like snort when I see like the production note, and it's like, if the Blue Jays game ends in time for the 10 p.m. deadline, this is like when the Jays are at home and their regular weeknight game time is 7:07. I'm like, I don't think one has ended before 10 all season. And as I record this here on June 20th, last night the Blue Jays played in Arlington, Texas against the Texas Rangers. And I think it was an 8 p.m. start, and it didn't even end for the 11:30 late deadline. And I, left work, and apparently the Jays won. But that's not so much important as the fact that, yeah, I think there people really do need to sort of look at this as a, from the perspective of, you know, the analytics people got what they wanted. They went from being, you know, Bill James and 30 guys on a Usenet group or 30 guys communicating through the mail, you know, bemoaning these inefficiencies in how, you know, teams constructed lineups and how teams, you know, evaluated talent, and they got welcomed in and have been a contributor to the game kind of getting away from its essence with all this extra time. Because it is interesting when you look at the piece I mentioned by Arthur, and sort of says, you know, pitchers get a little bit more velocity if they take, you know, an extra second, and I think something like three quarters of the starting pitchers in the major leagues are working slower than they did last year. And that extra bit of velocity, and there's definitely an overemphasis on velocity with pitchers all the way up from, you know, the developmental leagues. That extra velocity leads to runs being saved. And at the same time, you know, you've got all these hitters who've, you know, a coming generation of hitters who understand the strike zone very well, who, you know, have changed the launch angle of their swings to try to hit home runs and simply aren't shamed by strikeouts. You know, you look like the guys who are coming up, Cody Bellinger, the Dodgers, their rookie sensation. At this writing, 107 of his 215 plate appearances, so nearly dead even half, have ended with either a home run, walk, or strikeout. So when you consider what's going on, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. From what I've been reading, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred and everyone sort of in the, you know, sanctorum of the sport are kind of worried that their people aren't going to be interested because the game moves so slowly. And things are going to happen to try to affect change. One of which would probably be the 20-second pitch clock. So what's going to happen to the balance in the pitcher-batter relationship when that comes in is going to be interesting. It could be, you know, you can maybe liken it to when the NBA, you know, adjusted some of its rules to open up the game. Yeah, there was some ugly basketball for a little while, but eventually a generation of players came along who were suited to it. But yeah, I guess the thrust of what I'm talking about today is just, you know, it's, like I said, analytics went from being this outsider thing to something that was where every team had people doing it in-house. And I have to think on some level, at some point, you know, someone must have come to the teams or at least gone to pitching coaches and said, you know, tell your pitchers, take a little extra time, you know, game the system. And if you're not going to be penalized for working slowly. Obviously, analytics isn't solely to blame for it, and even me pointing this out isn't an argument against having it. It's just a fact that, you know, if something is going to be hailed as something that changed the way people see the sport in a mostly positive way, yeah, you have to look at an instance where it was left unchecked and it's hurt the sport negatively. I definitely think there has to be some honesty about that. I don't think analytics is the only reason for, you know, the problem that baseball has, the quandary it's in with the drawn-out games and then the lack of balls in play. I think there's a few other things. Obviously, the fact that there are more mid-inning pitching changes, more in-game pitching changes than there were even 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that's a small contributor, but it's not the only one. I think you'd really have to look at just a lot of trends in, I guess, what these undercurrents in the player pool that MLB has. I mean, you think of how much early sport specialization and specialization within early sport specialization probably plays a role now. 30 years ago, I mean, we you know, guys coming into baseball, they were guys who just played three sports in high school because they loved it. Now you have guys who are one sport athletes, and quite often pitchers, they've been, you know, identifying themselves as a pitcher only since puberty. And there's obviously an epidemic of Tommy John surgery, and there's all these guys just focusing on developing two pitchers so they can make the majors as a short reliever. I think that probably is another turnoff. I mean, I don't even know how you, as a fan in a sport where you sort of have that sort of intimacy with, in terms of how you relate to the players. I mean, you see them on TV, you could recognize them on the street compared to, you know, guys in the NBA or NFL or NFL or NHL. The guys whose visages are obscured by helmets and face masks and visors. I don't even know how you even keep up half the time with who's coming out of the bullpen, because every team uses a 12 or 13 man staff on the regular these days. I think that probably makes it hard when the most crucial moments of the game are in hands of people who are just kind of cypers, really. I think that's probably a contributor. You know, you had all these players have sort of just trained to be one type of thing, like hitters who have just focused on nothing but jacking the ball out of the park since they were probably 9 years old, and that's certainly hurt it. But yeah, I mean, I think this whole thing, it sort of gets into something I often wonder about, because again, I live in my own head with analytics. Like, what happens when it succeeds in its goals? Is every team going to play the same, and then is the game going to be not so interesting when you don't have any when there is no cutting edge? I mean, there's hardly always going to be some boundary that someone's going to push, but what's it going to look like when every team plays the same style? Like, if every NBA team started to play like the Houston Rockets, where they basically don't take any jump shot from inside the three-point arc. They're either driving to the rim or shooting a three. You know what happens when every NFL team decides to go for two-point conversions or go for it on fourth down most of the time? So, I mean, what's that? How's that going to affect one's enjoyment of the game if you're the type of fan who thinks you're an intellect? Anyways, I don't really have any magic solution for what MLB is going to do. I think the 20-second pitch clock is, I mean, sign me up for it. I mean, if guys like, you know, Bob Gibson, and who took the ball on 3 days rest, could work fast, I'm sure the guys today who work on 5 days rest, and I'm all for, you know, starting pitchers being babied a little bit. I mean, pitching injuries are still high. You want to be definitely able to hang around. I'm not one of those people who goes, oh, it's wimp ball. You know, the sports evolve, and also there's more home run threats up and down every lineup. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, you can show me the list of complete games leaders from 1974, and I'll ask you, yeah, how many guys that year even hit 35 home runs? Nobody in the American League. Actually, it was Greg Nettles with 32. Yeah, so I don't know. 20-second pitch clock. Obviously, I mean, the other things that seem to come up always are mound conferences. And I was at a White Sox-Blue Jays game last week, and where the White Sox huddled three times on the pitching mound in one inning, twice while they were changing pitchers and once to change signs. And it's kind of surprising that baseball, a sport which has really been forward-thinking on the tech side, like when you consider the success of Major League Baseball, advanced media, and how much StatCast and PitchFX are sort of part of the mainstream coverage of the sport now. It's surprising they haven't developed some sort of communication system for a catcher to give signs to a pitcher and have them be relayed to the infielders and outfielders, like some sort of like smartwatch that he could have that would sort of be color-coded or coded with shapes, kind of almost like the controller on a video game, which would be an easy thing for pretty much every Major League Baseball player to relate to, and probably something too that would help with communication when you consider, you know, you wouldn't have the language barriers like you would for a, you know, an American-born catcher working with a Japanese pitcher like Kohei Uehara. So it's interesting to see where that will go, but yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, analytics probably has to wear some of the blame for this, but there's other things that have to wear the blame. I think to circle back and sort of mentioned, you know, sort of a, I guess, a dumbing down or a lack of focus on, I guess, developing all-around skills. But again, you can't really blame young players and youth and the owners of baseball academies and parents and agents for pursuing that, because that's how the sport, you know, that's what the sport rewards. And, you know, like the old commercial in the 90s had it, chicks dig the long ball, right? And I think also, you know, I think if you look in terms of where the sport evolved and, you know, how evolution has no foresight, probably the retro vintage ballpark movement that started in the, with the opening of Camden Yards in Baltimore in the early 90s, that's also a factor too. I mean, you really maybe have to be an 80s kid to understand what baseball was like before, I don't know, probably about 1994 or so, when the majority of the stadiums were sort of these symmetrical cookie cutter ballparks, as they called them, a lot of them, with artificial turf. There's nothing good to say about artificial turf. It shortened a lot of careers. I mean, I almost wondered if it hurt careers to the extent that there almost needs to be like a special committee in Cooperstown to evaluate players whose, you know, career statistics. Tim Raines is a classic example. Were hurt because they played 81 games a year on, you know, carpet over concrete. But I mean, that the way the game was played and throughout the decade of the 80s, someone who started watching baseball as a little kid, and toward the end of that decade, it was a game that put a lot more emphasis on probably having an all-around skill set. That was the era of the 30 homer, 30 stolen base guy. It was also an era where you had the guys like Ricky Henderson and Eric Davis playing, and there's really not anyone like them around anymore. So I think there's a lot of contributors to sort of what's going on, but yeah. It's just ironic how it works out, though. You spend years saying, hey, you know, walks are as good as a hit. On-base percentage is more of a determinant of success than batting average. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with a strikeout. There's really no such thing as a team can't win by making productive outs. And you see that approach actually applied on a grand scale, and it ends up setting the sport back. It's a little bit ironic. Anywho, that's my little philippic for today. Maybe if they had gone back and not built all those huge parks, blah, 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 etc., we wouldn't be in this jam, but that's where the sport is. And yeah, hopefully with the right kind of eyes, you can foresee a day when baseball will get back to playing a game in a tidy 2 hours and 40 minutes. Maybe you're going to have to show every pitcher, you know, footage of Roy Halladay. Wouldn't be such a bad thing. A final thought on this, if indeed any of these count as thoughts. It is interesting, though, that the two sports on either side of the pond, the two sports that probably bear the most resemblance to their, you know, late 19th century origins, baseball and soccer, are both sort of contemplating changes to speed up the game. Last week, FIFA's rules panel proposed doing away with just playing two 45-minute halves of straight time with stoppage time added at the end of each half, and going to a timed game where the clock would stop every time the ball goes in a play or whatnot, and then time is back in on the restart. I mean, that is a radical change. It'd just be interesting to see. Like, it is interesting to see that one sport that really used tradition is willing to do something so radical, and yet here's Major League Baseball sitting there, I don't know, do we really want to do this? It is quite a contrast, but it also, the fact that both sports are sort of having to think these thoughts as, you know, telling about where we are in terms of sports in 2017. I guess that sort of wraps things up. The NHL draft is this week. Obviously, there's the whole Vegas expansion draft, and everyone's doing expansion drafts for everything. You know, what if you had to take one character off from every, like, 80s sitcom to make a new show? Like, you know, who would you protect from the cast of Newhart? It's fucking embarrassing. When did everyone think they were a general manager? But anyways, I thought I'd tell at least one NHL draft story about covering the draft. In 2012 was the first year I got to go. I was fortunate enough to go cover three drafts in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Newark, New Jersey. I didn't get to go to Chicago, where this year's is. I didn't get to go to Los Angeles. I didn't get to go to Florida. I got to go to Philly, Pittsburgh, and Newark. Yay. So the 2012 draft was in Pittsburgh. And one of my assignments that year was to get a feature story on a player from the Saskatoon Blades named Dalton Thrower. A few days before the draft, I think the Saskatoon Star Phoenix did a sort of a really sort of touchy-feely feature story on Dalton Thrower. Just his family had some bad breaks. Both of his parents were cancer survivors. He had survived being in a serious car crash when he was about 6 years old, and it was like, I think, thrown from the car and miraculously walked away uninjured, and, you know, obviously became was able to become a, you know, high performance hockey player. So, I mean, the whole thing was get a feature on Thrower. Dalton Thrower was a defenseman, sort of that kind of guy who, you know, sort of was a two-way defenseman, had some offensive game, was physical, was maybe would throw a borderline check. In fact, I think he did in the Memorial Cup a year later with the Saskatoon Blades. And I seem to remember him having a fight in the CHL Top Prospects game that year, which was out in Kelowna, BC. And lo and behold, the star goalie was some kid from the Sioux Greyhounds named Matt Murray. Wonder whatever happened to him. Jeez. So I'm assigned to get this story on Thrower. He was a guy, he was either going to go in late in the first or sometime in the second round. I was not that plugged in to know where someone was really going to go, but I usually would sort of have a range somewhere 10 to 15, within a range of 10 to 15 picks. You never really know. Anyway, so I was kind of sitting there like, okay, the ideal thing is he doesn't go on the first day because whoever the first rounder is going to be surrounded by media. When the first round is held on a Friday night. And then the next day, there's probably about a quarter of the media there. So I'm sitting there, okay, please don't let him go in the first round. My job gets a lot easier if he goes in the second. And so, lo and behold, he doesn't get taken in the first round. And my second thought is, let him get taken by, like, Phoenix or Carolina. You know, one of those you know, Gary Bettman, Southern Strategy, Sun Belt teams that has almost no media there. Like, the only person is, like, some jagoff, you know, from NHL.com. Like, some guy from the team website who won't even know how to pronounce his name. We'll have to ask somebody what team the guy played for. Like, I would literally have to do that for people at the draft. They'd be like, does that guy play for Ottawa or Oshawa? And I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, anyway, so the draft starts back up again on Saturday morning, and they fly through this pretty fast. And the way it was set up at the draft is they would sort of have this room with about eight different podiums at it, and there'd be a little tote board on the wall saying, you know, who was at each podium, because none of the NHL writers, I mean, they've got a whole other league to cover. They don't know who many of the players are outside of maybe the top 10 picks or someone who is the son of a former NHLer. So the Canadians that year, I think Thrower went 35th overall, and I rushed back there. And they sort of, once a player's drafted, they go up, they get the jersey, they get the ball cap, and then I think they have to go back and take a bunch of basically glamour shots. You know, that stupid shot everyone has where the guy's pointing the stick at the camera, like they're the first like the photographer is the first person to think of doing that pose. Yeah, so they do all that, and then they come. And they usually have to do a bunch of interviews for, you know, the NHL's various in-house you know, media arms, and then they come to the podium. So I rush back there, and I see the podium set, and I see a kid, I sort of get the glimpse of the famous, you know, red, white, red, blue, and white Montreal Canadiens sweater, and I was like, but I see the board says Philippe Bozon, or Tim Bozon, who had been the Habs' third round pick, and he was even better, he, of course, was a great story in his own right, too, for different reasons, which I don't need to get into. And I'm like, shit, I missed him. Like, my one thing I had to do today. But then I sort of look and I'm like, oh, no, the board's wrong. Thrower's there. But there's a pretty big – but at the same time, I'm like, fuck. Like, of all of the 30 teams he could have been picked by, he has to go to the fucking Habs. Because, you know, here I'm thinking, go to a small market American team. Instead, he goes to the team from the second largest city in Canada. So there's tons and tons of media around him, you know, because, and I'm sitting there like, okay, how am I going to get in there and ask the questions about, you know, everything that's sort of gone on in it, but in his background, without sort of tipping off people that there's more of a story here. And I sort of was able to ask questions vaguely, sort of in a vague kind of way, and I think Thrower picked up on it and answered them and had some really good answers. But the funny part was there was a reporter there from a CTV reporter from Western Canada. And I think she asked something like, was it hard having to wait a day before getting drafted, i.e. because he didn't go in the first round? And I remember there was like the Thrower sort of paused and sort of like gave her this look like, and and almost like I got this, I mean, maybe this was just me projecting. It was kind of like, you know, I've had all this other shit happen in my life. You know, my dad had stomach cancer. My mom's had cancer, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And you think like having to wait one more day to realize every hockey player's dream of pulling on an NHL sweater on the NHL draft floor was really a big thing. So I, you know, I sort of had to laugh like hell. And obviously, you know, the joke's on me because, like I say, I'm a recovering sports writer and that reporter has gone on to much bigger and brighter things. Anyway, hope everyone has a good week. Obviously, it's the official first week of summer in Canada, which you know because your friends who don't watch the CFL are making snide comments about the CFL. That's the official summer solstice in this country. Anyways, that was the Commissioner of Cynicville. It's an ironic title. Take care, everybody. Mm-hmm.